Hello, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining us on the World Peace Diet Circle call for September 18th, 2018. And it's just a beautiful day here in Northern California where we are. And I'm just delighted that we had this opportunity to spend a little bit of time before we go flying off to Europe. Madeline and I will be leaving on Thursday. I guess you're all aware of that. So that's why we're having our call a little bit earlier on Tuesday. And so we also, as I mentioned, have the really honor and pleasure of having Sassy with us, Sassy Knutson, who's got the enviable, domain name of vegancoach.com. I'm sure there's a lot of people who would love to have vegancoach.com. But she's been in this a long time, got in early, and she was with us during the World Peace Diet Facilitator Mastery Training Programs, sharing her wisdom and insights, information, and inspiration about ways to make vegan living more easy and delicious and fun, and helping other people to do the same thing. So she'll be joining us. We haven't heard from her for quite a few years, and I thought it would be great to have her back with us again. So, all right, so let's take a moment here, as we like to do typically, and tune in for just a minute to the beautiful spirit and space of love, awareness, and freedom that is the foundation of the World Peace Diet Circle, the caring that we have in our hearts for all expressions of life. So let's just join together for a minute. Feel free, as you're listening, whether you're driving or just sitting quietly, whatever you're doing, with eyes open or closed, however it's most comfortable, let's just take a moment and join our hearts together and our minds together in unity with the feeling of caring for this beautiful creation, the many miraculous expressions of life on this earth, including ourselves, our loved ones, all of the birds and the fishes, the marine animals, all of the animals celebrating their lives on land and sea, as well as the beautiful plants of this earth, all of the trees and flowers, the immense complexity, the staggering beauty and abundance of life here. So we give thanks for this human life, this precious opportunity that we have of learning and awakening, contributing and deepening our understanding of our true nature, perhaps going beyond the tired narrative that's been injected into us by our upbringing, by our media, connecting with the vividness of this present moment, the beauty of every moment, of the sun shining and the breeze blowing, and the hummingbirds zipping about, and the fishes celebrating, people learning and helping, contributing and working to help make a better world. So we give thanks to all of our colleagues and friends and everyone known and unknown who's working to help liberate animals and to make the connections between spiritual awakening and the liberation of animals and social justice and the liberation of animals and environmental sustainability and the liberation of animals. That really the liberation of animals is what's truly on our plates from every perspective during these critical times. So we give thanks knowing that there is an awakening out of the devastating narrative that supports and promotes violence towards animals and reducing them to mere property objects, that we are discovering the truth within ourselves that we've always known, that all beings are worthy of kindness and respect, and that each one of us who is on this call is every day developing in our capacities to be effective and joyful and liberated forces for healing and for freedom, for wisdom, for kindness and caring and respect for all life. We give thanks knowing that each one of us has a unique part to play, a role to fill, a piece of the puzzle to contribute in this awakening of humanity. And that as we do that, our life takes on ever more richness and meaning. It doesn't mean that our life is easy. There's many challenges that we face. And these challenges are always opportunities to grow and learn and evolve. And so we give thanks, finally, just sending our blessings and gratitude to the animals of this earth for their continual encouragement, for the enormous suffering that they endure because of our blindness and our delusion. We apologize to them. We're working to remedy the situation that has a lot of inertia. It's been going on for thousands of years. And we're here to help bring an end to this delusion and usher in a way of living that's appropriate for human beings in relationship to each other and to all expressions of life, based on kindness and respect, eating foods and living lives based on our inner wisdom and intuition of what is right and in integrity for all of us. And finally, we give thanks, knowing that we are part of this awakening on planet Earth for all beings, for the benefit of all beings. May all beings be happy and free, and may we continue to build a world that cares for everyone. And so it is. Okay, so it's my delight, as I said earlier, to introduce Sassy. What we'll be doing is just having a dialogue with Sassy and I for a little while. As you all probably know by now, the drill, if you would like to contribute, ask a question, make a comment, you press *6 on your phone, and then that makes it possible for me to see that you have, quote, raised your hand, and I can unmute your phone, and you can speak away, and everybody can hear you. And so, so I can unmute you if you'd like to ask a question of Sassy. And so I'll just say a few words, and we'll be talking as usual, probably, 15 or 20 minutes, see how it goes. And then there's a lot of other things I want to discuss later on in the call. And of course, if you have any other questions or concerns or sorrows or celebrations or whatever you'd like to share with us, feel free to do that by pressing *6. So, Sassy Knudsen is with us, and she's, I believe, still in Nevada, and she's the force behind vegancoach.com, and it's really, I think, a fantastic work that she's doing, because it's basically about helping liberate people from the violence that we all engage in our society towards animals through food from the time we're little kids, by thinking that we need to eat meat, dairy products, and eggs to have foods that are nutritionally balanced, that taste good, that we like, that have lots of fat in them and so forth. It's so yum, 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 so delicious. And so she's got this beautiful way of making, preparing food much more easy and delicious and simple for those, for people who are transitioning to a plant-based way of eating. So her website is open to everyone. You don't have to be a vegan to go there. She welcomes everyone. And so I won't say too much more. She's been doing this for years, I think over 10 years. And so I'm sure she has a lot to teach us about connecting with people who are already vegans or new vegans or people who are not yet vegan, how we can perhaps in our own ways be a coach for people, either professionally or non-professionally, just helping people. And I think there's a big need for vegan coaching, and as more people are transitioning, we're finding that a lot of people, supposedly according to these studies, that go vegan after a while, they go back again because of the tremendous forces outside of them and inside their own mind that make them think that they would rather have some meat and get and be with their friends at Thanksgiving or at the office potluck or whatever and eat the same thing. So it's a very challenging thing, and I think Sassy has a lot of insights and probably raises some good questions for us. So I'm going to go ahead now and unmute your phone. I can see you here, Sassy. So here we go. And there it is. Okay. So can you speak? Can you hear me?
Hi, Will. How are you?
All right. Awesome. Good. Great to have you with us, Sassy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Of course. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I have to tell you, I have been on so many conference calls over the years, and I just love the way you started yours. I'm sure you do that every time, and it's so unique, and it is just so beautiful. I didn't want it to end.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I like to just kind of speak from my heart at the beginning, because sometimes we tend to get involved in all the issues, and it's important to do that, but to remember the deeper connection that we have with each other and be grateful for everything that we're able to contribute. So thank you. Thanks for recognizing that and for being part of it. Yeah. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about what you've been up to for the last 10 years with vegancoach.com, what your goals are and what the challenges have been, and anything else that you think would be interesting for people. You know, everyone who's listening is already a vegan, pretty much a world peace diet oriented vegan, so we're already kind of on the same page in terms of the underlying values that we have. So I think people would be really just so interested just to hear anything you have to share. And I'll go ahead and step in sometimes and ask maybe more questions or make comments.
Okay, that sounds great. I guess I'll just give a little background, and then if you guys want to ask questions or you just want to bounce some ideas off or something, I'm more than happy to answer any questions. I started as a vegan coach. I was a vegan personal chef many years ago, and I started to just wonder if the food that I was making for my clients and my husband and I were actually, like, well-balanced, and so I became a nutritional consultant, and that's when I started doing more vegan coaching. But I was kind of realizing that I really wasn't able to reach many people in my small town of Reno. And
Reno, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Nowadays, we've actually moved over back to Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is where our family lives. But I still have the same cell phone, so that's probably where you're getting that from, Will. And so So I was looking for a way to just reach more people, and I discovered that I could publish a website. And so I kind of learned the steps to doing that. And so I took my coaching business online. And, you know, I started out where I was teaching people, you know, lots of cooking tips and techniques, and then over the years, it just really grew. There really wasn't very many vegan websites when I started back in 2007. So, you know, there was just a lot of people coming at me asking for this and that. They wanted weight loss, they wanted menu planning, they wanted so much. And so I kind of lost my way a little bit after a few years because I wanted to give everybody what they wanted. And I just, you know, over the years, I've learned that in order to really be effective, it was really important for me to just really get focused on what exactly I am good at and what I want to teach people. And so I went back to my roots, which is what I started with, how to cook without any recipes at all. And so that has been my main focus for probably the last maybe 5 years. It's always been available on my site and in my teachings, but now everybody knows that's really what our focus is. I have a newsletter, recipes, schmecipes. It's like we just, you know, recipes, they serve a great purpose. But for the everyday, that's what I'm teaching people is how to, you know, go in your kitchen. What do you have in your fridge? What's in your pantry? What's on your countertop? And let's get cooking, that sort of thing. So that's where, that's in a nutshell, where I've been and where I'm going.
Great. Yeah, I think, I know Madeline, my wife, would be right on your, in the same corner. She loves just cooking without any recipes at all. And I think she would say the same thing. Recipes, schmecipes. Let's just get in and make, see what we have and make something. But I think you're right. Where a lot of people in our society are not confident, I think, really in the kitchen to do that, and a lot of people feel like they need to rely on convenience foods that they can just throw in a tub of boiling water or stick in the microwave or whatever. So I think it's great to be able to help people eat healthy, nutritionally balanced foods, meals, and that are easy and fun to make. So you mentioned a couple of different things. One is the importance of finding a niche, I guess you'd say, like a kind of a relatively small niche within the larger vegan coaching community, something like that, that if you try to please everybody and be an expert in everything, you kind of don't do as well on every level. It's hard to really please everybody. And so by kind of narrowing your focus to one thing, like cooking without recipes as a vegan, that actually works better in the long run.
Yes, that's what I found, especially now. There are so many people who have wonderfully gone vegan, and they're out, you know, everybody has recipes now, everybody's teaching, there's lots of coaches, and so I think it's more important than ever that you find what you're really good at and go that direction, because as soon as you start bringing what you know and love, your passion comes through, and even if, you know, 5-10 other people are teaching exactly the same thing as you, you bring your own brand of, you know, the way you teach, the way you talk, your creativity. It's all, you know, everybody has their own way of doing things. So
right,
you know, even if you see someone else has, oh, I that was the niche I was thinking of, please don't let me discourage you, because there are many ways to do the same thing.
Right, and you're basically getting most of your connections and everything through, I'm assuming, the internet, not so much through people that live where you are, having them over to your house or having a cooking class at a local kitchen or something like that. You do it mostly through the internet?
That's correct. Very interesting, though. I have been thinking that it would be a really good idea to start doing more local things, and so that's something I'll be looking into in the future.
Right, right, because that's part of the thing. I think on the internet, since it's so vast, it really is important, I think, for everyone, all of us kind of thinking about this, if we want to share ourselves and help other people in moving, however that is, moving, you know, toward veganism, or supporting them if there already are, to find a niche or find, like you're saying, just find what we really feel particularly strongly about, because it's a huge thing. Some people are really into, say, veganism and, the devastation to fish, you know, fish populations, or to be a healthy vegan, but you know, even focusing down to cooking without recipes, or cooking, you know, being a vegan who is really an expert in, say, Indian food or something like that, and Indian philosophy you could bring into. So I guess the idea is to just find what you really love and apply it, because when we do that, then it's not a job. It's something we really enjoy, something we love to do.
Absolutely,
yeah.
I agree.
And what were you? And the other thing I was thinking about asking you is just in terms of the challenges that you find people are having, like, because so what do? So people go to your website, and then they see it. They sign up for coaching with you, one-on-one sessions, or what is it that they actually? What do you actually do?
Good question. My website is information-based, so it's lots of content, hundreds of pages of cooking tips. Recipes are in there, too, but basically you might learn how to cook beans or how to cook buckwheat or quinoa or broccoli, you know, how to steam vegetables, how to roast, things like that. And people sign up for my newsletter. They'll see newsletter sign-ups throughout my website, and that is a very important thing, of course, is to, try to get people to join you and your list, because as soon as you do that, you're able to contact them. You don't need Google. You don't need Facebook. You don't need any of those social medias or anything. These people then become your contacts, and you are free to contact them anytime you want. And so that's what happens is I have a weekly newsletter every Sunday that I send out. It's filled with just really great cooking and nutrition tips and just funny things. I try to keep people entertained. And then every once in a while we'll have a sale or, just a really good deal on one of our cooking classes. And so what I did was, over the years, everything was just on my website, and then I started to create ebooks that I would sell, you know, with this, all this information I put into ebooks. And then along the way, we realized that people weren't really loving ebooks. They wanted more hands-on kind of interaction with us. And so then we pulled out our video camera, and we started making cooking classes, and we made lots and lots of videos, and those are now in online classes. And so that's kind of how it works. People can go through the site. They can look through hundreds of pages. It's free. There's nothing that they have to pay for that. But if they want more of a structured environment and be able to be in contact with me, my husband, too, he's joined in, and we're there answering questions. And it's really a beautiful back and forth in our cooking classes. All the students are able to talk with each other and share tips and pointers. And it's really become something I just love it so much, so much more than I used to. It's just your business just grows and it builds, and you start to find out what you're really, really good at.
Wow, that sounds so interesting. So you basically have a newsletter where every week you send out content about things that are interesting to people, plus your website has a lot of content, so people can just go and learn, and then they feel that they want to know more, then they can pay you basically for private, an online class that other people take as well. And is each one of those live, or are they pre-taped, those videos? Just out of curiosity.
Yep, those are pre-taped.
And so when they watch them, and then do they have an opportunity to ask questions or anything like that, or is it all just going through and trying it out in the kitchen themselves?
Yeah, every lesson of every class, many lessons in every class, and there's content and there's videos, and then at the end of every lesson, we have it's a discussion where people can ask questions. They post their homework. We call them missions. So they may go in the kitchen. They have a whole week to go in their kitchen, create one of these missions, which might be, create a freestyle broccoli dish, or, you know, whatever it is that we're talking about at the moment. And then they go mm-hmm. in and they make a dish and they take a picture and they post it in class. And then they tell us, you know, how did it turn out? How are the flavorings? What herbs and spices did you use? What would you do mm-hmm. different next time? Blah, blah, blah. And we all just kind of talk about each other's dishes. And it's a huge learning experience for me as well. I mean, I don't know everything there is to know about cooking. And I pick up the best tips from my students. They're so fun. They're so smart.
That's fascinating. Wow. That's great. And the other thing is, in terms of the food, are you teaching them, besides making things that really are tasty and so forth, there's different sort of nutritional philosophies within the vegan movement. So I'm just kind of curious, do you get into those kinds of debates and questions, whether, for example, to go more raw or to go more starch-based like John McDougall, or more like greens-based like Joel Fuhrman, or, you know, they're all kind of arguing, and I don't know who's, it's all good, I think, but I mean, it seems like there's definitely people that have different ideas about what makes a healthy vegan nutritional foundation. So I was just wondering how that all goes.
That's such a good question, because especially now, like you said, there are many different ways you can do the vegan diet. You can no oil, some people no gluten, and on and on it goes. So the thing about the type of cooking that we teach is whatever it is that you buy for your home is what you're going to use in your cooking. So if you don't use oil, then if you don't buy oil, then you're not going to be using it in your dishes. And so what we teach is more of how to flavor your food, how to use herbs and spices and seasonings and whatever you have on hand, how to balance meals, how to balance flavors. So that's the type of thing we get into. And our students are all across the board. Some are no oil. Some are still using oil. And everything in between, like you said, some people are really focused on, more starchy. Some people just really want to add the kale and the Swiss chard and the spinach and all the greens. And then some people can do lots of beans. Other people want to stay away from grains. So, I mean, it's all over the place. And it really does bring up some very interesting discussions.
And they have discussions too, I guess, about these things. I can imagine it would get could go on a long time.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to kind of be careful, because some students, they just really believe, you know, for instance, no oil, and you know, maybe other students aren't there yet. So it's really nuanced sometimes how to talk to people so that they're not offended, but they kind of keep an open mind, as you probably know, for allowing and accepting other people to be as they are. You know, the point is that we're all in this together, and we're all doing our best to eat, you know, whole food, plant-based meals. That's really what it's about.
Okay, so that's what I was wondering. So you don't take a strong stance pro or con some of these things like gluten or oil or starch or raw or whatever, but you do take a strong stand, obviously, that it's vegan, that it's whole foods as much as possible, and I guess hopefully organic, I would say, myself, as much as possible.
Yep, exactly.
Uh-huh. Good. Yeah, it sounds really beautiful, because I think that's exactly the foundation that will help people stay with it, because they'll feel good. They'll be healthy. They'll be making delicious meals. If they're eating a whole foods plant-based diet, for the most part, I think it's the problems come in when people are eating processed foods. And it's tempting to have, you know, just to go buy processed foods. But for the most part, if you buy the vegetables and grains and just cook them, make it yourself, that seems like, but do you also, I guess you also teach people to use tofu and tempeh and those kinds of things as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing is I'm going to just say officially, please ask, press *6 if you have any questions or comments on this. We're getting kind of to the end of this part of the sharing, but I wanted to ask the kinds of issues that people are having that you have to deal with besides just in the kitchen, making, you know, how much nutritional yeast you want to add to a dish or whatever, but, you know, like the deeper issues of relationships that they're having with other people around food and so forth. Do you get into those kinds of things?
We do. You know, it's not anything that we bring up in the lessons. It just naturally comes about as people introduce themselves in class and they say, you know, hi, I'm Jane, and, you know, I live with my two teenagers and my husband, and they all are making fun of me because I'm vegan, and, you know, I feel so alone. And, it, you know, sometimes they can make things funny, and then other times you can tell that they're really hurting. And so I think it's so important to have a community where they just feel very supported. And so I would say that's probably the number one thing that I hear, and I've seen this for many years now, is the people who many times someone goes vegan and they just feel very alone, and none of their friends are vegan. They don't know where to go and who to turn to. And so when they find someone who can help them and make them feel like they're not crazy, I think that's so important.
Right, and have a regular community. So that's why they might take a class, right? They would have that kind of support. They have other people going with the same questions.
Yes, absolutely, wow. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I know that's a huge thing in our society. I mean, actually less in our society than in some societies. I remember when Madeline and I think I might have mentioned this at some point, but when we go to countries that are very traditional, like India and China and some, you know, Africa, some places, it's really so hard for people to eat food that's not what everybody in their family is eating. It's almost like completely unthinkable. And so usually it was so funny because whenever we'd see somebody, like in India especially, I remember it was always the whole family that was vegan. It was never one person. It's like the mother, the father, and all the kids are all vegan. Because if one kid, you know, really wants to go vegan, it's not going to happen unless the whole family goes vegan. And then, and sometimes, you know, it'll work. They'll get the whole family to go vegan because it's so deeply, you know, because in here in the States, we're quite a bit more independent as individuals to sort of, you know, do what we want to do kind of. And we still may feel, you know, somewhat isolated and so forth, but in these traditional cultures, man, it's like it's just not an option. You're part of the group and you eat what the group eats. That's it. You know, you can't get out of it. So, yeah. So it's very interesting to feel that and to see that, how that is. Okay. So anyone have any questions? No, so far I don't see anybody. I see people just nodding. I think I'm just visualizing it. People are smiling and nodding their heads and enjoying what you're saying. And I'm hoping that you've helped maybe inspire some people to think about ways that they can also have some kind of a website, perhaps, or classes, or just share these ideas with people. Because I think it's very daunting for a lot of people when they make the change from so-called normal eating to vegan, that there's just so many new foods that can be explored, and people don't know what they are and how to put them together, and what the heck is tofu and what is tahini and where do I get my protein? And so you have to, you know, always answer these questions and over again. But I'm hoping that this is something that other people can make use of, because you've kind of been forging a path there. You've been breaking a trail. And the things that you're saying are very, very wise. I think having, like just the idea that, you know, anyone can do this. I mean, anyone really today, if you have an internet connection, I guess I should say anyone, but anyone with an internet connection can actually, if it's your thing, I mean, if you're interested in it, you can actually have a website. It's not that hard with the new software that's available, and you can put in a mailing list where people can sign up, and they can pretty soon join your mailing list. And I think personally that's in some ways a wiser way to do it than to do it through Well, I guess I was going to say through Facebook or YouTube. I mean, Facebook and YouTube are probably good. I've just lately been getting a little bit disillusioned with Facebook and YouTube and Twitter because of the censorship issues. You know, and we're really, right now they're going after people like, you know, Alex Jones or, you know, people we think, oh, well, you know, I don't agree with him, so it's okay if he gets censored. But, you know, that's not a good attitude because if they, once they censor anybody, they're censoring everybody, and pretty soon they'll go after vegans. I mean, so when you have your own mailing list, they can't censor you, I don't think. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it would be harder because you can send out your emails no matter what. Whereas I've seen people, I mean, it's happened a lot. People have their whole YouTube channel taken down. They have their whole Facebook thing taken down, and, you know, it can be devastating.
And, you know, I was looking through your list of, I think it was PDFs or links for September, and you said something, I thought I read something about Cowspiracy. Was their business taken down?
Yeah, yeah, Cowspiracy had their Facebook page taken down. Exactly, Cowspiracy.
That's,
I mean,
crazy. That's outrageous.
Yeah, and I don't think it's up yet. I mean, and the weird thing is when they take your page down, you know, it's very difficult to talk to a human being, you know, to say, what the heck are you doing? You know, they have these enormous bureaucracies in place that, you can't really, you know, it's hard to, you can't just go talk to them. So it's very frustrating, I think, for Kip Anderson. You know, he's a World Peace Society facilitator, and he's got somebody working on it. And they reinstated his web, Cowspiracy Facebook page, but they did not really do it, because if you just type in the search bar, you want to go to Cowspiracy. That's the only way that most people do. You type in Cowspiracy, it doesn't come up. You know, you have to somehow just get there. You have to know it, but you can't get there by just typing in. It doesn't come up when you type it in. At least it didn't like a few days ago. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing. And I remember reading also that Michael Greger, in his his website, which I think is really great. You know, helps a lot of people, but it's been now classified as fake news. You know, I mean, what's fake news? It's whatever, you know, the establishment says they don't agree with. So I think you're, you know, having your own email list, that's a great way to go. You can keep going. And also having a local, something like you said, you know, like you're saying, you're exploring doing local events. That's what Madeline and I really find great. You know, just being sort of at the grassroots level, traveling around and just meeting people directly face to face. And we're still allowed to do that, which is good to see. And I know you're laughing, but quite honestly, I can't go back to China now, I don't think, because they're basically clamping down. You cannot have a gathering of more than 30 people, you know. And even when we were there last time, you know, we were going to a hotel for a, you know, they had like 300 people coming, and they just canceled it that day. They just said, nope, too big, you're not going to do it. So I mean, we just have to be aware that, you know, there's forces that, you know, can make rules, and they enforce them, unfortunately, with power. And so it's really important, I think, that we just keep putting out there the truth and keep try to keep people realizing how important it is that everyone has, you know, be allowed to speak their voice. Don't have this sort of mentality that only people we agree with are allowed to speak. You know, we have to really let everybody speak, I think. But anyway, that's a whole different issue. But I want to thank you so much. And so far, no one is, I don't see any people pressing *6. So I don't want to hold you up. Maybe sometimes what happens, you know, we get people afterwards that want to say something. But, okay, everybody, if you have any question or comment, press *6. A lot of people like to just listen. They don't want to say anything, and that's fine, too. But I think we're pretty much at the end of our time. Is there any last thing you'd like to say before we go? Any closing words about anything that we didn't cover or anything else?
Well, no. I guess if anybody comes up with a question for me, I have a contact form on my website, and you can shoot me a question through there.
That's good.
Send it to my newsletter if you'd like, and contact me that way. Whatever works.
Yeah. There is actually someone who just asked a question, so I'll go ahead and I'm not exactly sure who it is, but go ahead. I just unmuted your phone.
Hi, Will. This is Andy.
Hi.
I've just been listening to all of this. I didn't know about Cowspiracy and the Facebook and all of that. I have a question. I just have attended this Democratic thing, this guy running for Congress in California, Mike Levin, who says a big focus of his is the environment. And so I didn't bring up anything there, but it's occurred to me I would like to, you know, attend one of these events and ask him if he's familiar with the film Cowspiracy and what he thinks of it and that type of thing in front of everyone, hopefully, because I did not hear him mention anything about diet. All he mentioned was taking care of the beautiful scenery in California and these people's, you know, million-dollar homes and things like that, and that, you know, that environment. But I'm wondering now, is Cowspiracy still free on Netflix?
Is it still available on Netflix? Yeah, I think it's still available on Netflix. I don't have Netflix, so I am not exactly sure.
I don't
sure.
anymore either, but a lot of people do. So
yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's definitely still available, either free or for whatever, however they do it, for a few dollars or however they do it. I don't know, on Netflix. Yeah. I'm sure it is. And
it's
really
asks
great.
So if someone asks the question about where they can see it, they can still see it, you think, on Netflix or. Where else could someone pay for it? Like, could they buy it on Amazon or something for a few dollars? Or
yeah, I'm pretty sure. I haven't checked, but I'm sure it must be available on Amazon. I mean,
okay,
someone
so
can
just,
check, but
yeah.
But I think you can, you know, if you Google it, you can. I don't think you can see it for free anywhere, but for a few dollars, you can. I think you can probably watch it. And,
oh, you don't think so on Netflix or?
I think on Netflix you can see it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can still see
yeah.
it. Any thoughts on how you would word something if you're asking a question to him, which I sort of doubt that he's seen it or even heard of it, but he is big into promoting how he cares about the environment. Can I ask what, if you were to ask a question in front of all of his supporters, how would you word that? Like, if you want to know what he thought of Cowspiracy, has he seen it or would he be willing to watch it, what would you say?
Well, I think, you know, the main thing, you know, in these things is to, you know, be respectful, but just say, you know, you really appreciate his concern for the environment and that that's a critical issue today. And as the documentary Cowspiracy, you know, points out, it's actually animal agriculture that is a driving force behind global climate destabilization, rainforest destruction, ocean destruction, aquifer depletion, water pollution. And this has been documented by the National Academy of Sciences and the United Nations. And you would like to know what his position is on helping people to reduce the amount of meat, dairy, and eggs they're consuming and to perhaps stop these subsidies, animal agriculture, perhaps put a tax on these foods that are so devastating to the environment. You know, what did you think about that? That's what I would say, something like that.
Okay, now I have to show my total ignorance and challenges in this. In everything you just stated, it sounds magnificent. Me personally, if I'm going to get up there, not get up anywhere, but just speak in front of a bunch of people and to pose the question, it would need to be a lot simpler than what
okay.
you just said. Like, could you, like, if
I think, okay,
could,
just simply,
I know
just,
this
just
is
basically,
embarrassing, but
yeah, no, just it, simply, just say, you know, you really appreciate his concern for the environment. That you know, just say, I personally really had my eyes open when I saw the acclaimed documentary Cowspiracy, which really showed that animal agriculture is actually the leading cause of environmental devastation. What do you plan to do about this? about the, you know, in larger culture, environmental devastation. You know, just that simple. Like you saw this movie and really made an impact on you, and you'd like to know, you know, what he plans to do about it.
Okay.
Something like that.
I like that. Okay, that's simple enough that hopefully I can remember that.
I know what you mean. It's hard, you know, and all these people, you've got the microphone and there's like however many hundreds of people.
It's not
it's
like I understand what you're saying and I've read these things 1,000 times in books, but to me, honestly, there are a bunch of big words that I can't remember to repeat. So
right.
Things really
simplified,
and especially to remember something on the spot, it's got to be very, very simple.
Right.
That's a good idea. Yeah, so what do you think? And asking him, what do you think, or what will you be doing about it? Okay, I like that.
It's great to just,
Thank you
know, bring it
much.
Up. Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah, okay.
Hey, Will, can I ask a quick question? This is Sassy. Can I ask a question to Andy?
Sure.
Hi, Andy.
Hi.
Of course. Have you actually watched the movie Cowspiracy?
Yes.
Okay.
Probably a few times. And not for a while, but a few times. I got rid of Netflix, but I did watch it when I had Netflix.
Okay, so I guess if I were going into that situation, what I might do is consider was there a particular part of the movie that just really moved you? So you're speaking from that point of passion rather than trying to think about something rehearsed. I mean, what is it that when you watch that movie, this particular part really moved you to tears or that you were so angry about? I mean, maybe that's kind of a good way to go into bringing up the question.
That sounds wonderful. Although I'm thinking, I know what moves me most powerfully is the animal issue, but I sort of suspect, you know, what he's pointing at is the looks of things and, you know, healthy breathing thing, you know, that type of thing, rather than being passionate about the animals. I don't know. I might be wrong, but my main passion is the animals.
Yeah.
But I like that. Yeah, I like that. That's, you know, maybe I should just get Netflix again briefly so I can rewatch.
Yeah, I know. That's what I did. Right.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I got Netflix for just so I could watch Cowspiracy, and then I canceled it. But I think, you know, basically that's a great idea from Sassy. There's certain things that I think in that film and actually, you know, quite a few films that really have an emotional impact, and that's easier to remember that. I think one of the things in that movie that really strikes everyone probably is how the big government and corporate forces just keep everyone in the dark about what's really going on. You know, how the media doesn't cover, media covers everything up, and how even the nonprofits that we trust, like the Sierra Club and Greenpeace, and how they actually are in collusion in many ways.
Right.
I don't want to bring this up either. You know, that kind of thing. It's like, gosh, you know, no wonder nobody knows about this. No wonder nobody's talking about it. It's because there are powerful forces that don't want anyone to talk about this. And you could maybe even mention that. You know, the movie showed how there's very powerful forces that don't want anyone to talk about or think about animal agriculture and its devastating impact on the environment. But what do you think? Are you willing to talk about it? I sure would love it.
Oh, I love that. And you know what? You just reminded me, because it's like I'm saying Cowspiracy. I know it had a powerful impact, but yet I forgot a lot of it. And you brought up the big thing of how they expose these organizations that people donate to all the time and trust in them and believe in them. And so, you know what? That's it. I've got to get Netflix again so I can watch this. And then I think maybe I'll even write down some things of what you both said and try to keep it as simple as possible and bring that with me.
It's always good to have something, I think, you know, in the beginning. You just have something written down and you can look at it right before you start speaking, and then you'll feel confident.
That's a great idea. Okay,
your mind doesn't go blank.
Very, very much. It's helpful.
All right. Great. All right. Thanks so much, Andy. I appreciate it. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much, Sassy. That was a great question you asked too there. And yeah, if anyone has any other questions, we'll probably move on to other things now. But it's been really delightful to have you with us, and I'm so excited that you're still, after 10 years, more than 10 years, still touching people, still inspiring people to go vegan and be vegan, not just vegan, but be healthy and enjoy it, because the statistics show, apparently, that a lot of people go back, and that's not, it's understandable, but I think what you're doing is helping people stay vegan, not only become vegan, but to stay vegan, and that's really critical to our movement and to the animals.
Great. Thank you so much, Will. It was really a pleasure being here with all of you.
All right. Give our best to your husband. Is his name Jeff, I think, I remember? Is that right?
Yes. Yep, that's right.
And it's great you guys have it as kind of a team thing, right? He's now working with you. I think pretty much, I'm just guessing, but it seemed like I remember that he was starting to move in and you guys are doing it together.
Yes, absolutely. He started out where he was, in charge of like the accounting and, now he's, the database and all that stuff. And then he started teaching, the beginner's cooking class with me, and now he has his own class called Loafing Around with Jeff that teaches you how to make no meat loaves, and so that's really recipe free.
That's cute.
Yeah, it's fun.
Great. All right. Well, thanks again, and we'll be in touch. Thanks so much for joining.
Okay.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Will. Good night.
Good night. Yeah, thanks. Okay. So, really appreciate the sharing from Sassy. That was very interesting. And we have a little bit more time left. It's now, we're about almost an hour into our call. And so just let me know if you have any questions or concerns or comments, anything you'd like to share with the community, with all of us. I wanted to share just a few things before we run out of time here. So I'll go ahead and dive into that. And the thing, I guess, that there's quite a few issues, of course, always developing. It's a never change. It's a sort of always changing kaleidoscope, it seems like, of issues within the vegan movement and in our society in general. And we just touched on one of them. I won't go into it too much more, but just the whole issue of having people censored, banning books. Amazon is now banning books. I mean, that's something that's very disturbing to me, because, it's kind of the point where if you're going to buy a book, you have to buy it from Amazon. And they've been pretty effective at putting everybody else out of business. And now there's quite a few writers whose books are no longer going to be carried by Amazon because they question the official narrative. And again, to me, this is disturbing because right now maybe vegan books aren't being banned, but it's a small step from somebody who says something maybe that's against the official narrative about Russia or whatever it is, to then saying, well, that this is against vaccine safety, or is it against children's safety? You're saying that they don't need to eat dairy products, but then their bones aren't going to be good. We're not going to carry your book here anymore. So I think, what do we do? I guess we have to be careful. We have to understand that there are very powerful forces who are in many ways in charge of the large scale institutions that we're using, a lot of us are using. So I think decentralization is really helpful. Being savvy, just being aware of what's happening and not believing the official narratives. I mean, I've gotten to the point now where I know there's some truth that is sometimes written in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or CNN or whatever. But most of it, I think, is probably highly suspect. So I think the more we can create alternative avenues, that's one of the reasons that we I'm doing these tours is that I think it's the grassroots level where we have the most direct impact on each other and where we can communicate the most freely with each other, and as long as we can do that. And so, yeah, we're getting ready for this this lecture tour to all these different countries in the European Union, plus Switzerland, which is not in the European Union, which I think, in a way, was smart of them to stay out of it. But we're going to be, I'll just give you a quick rundown, because I wanted to mention that quickly. We're going to be flying off to Porto, which is, I never heard of it either, a little city in the northern part of Portugal, where they're having a vegan conference. And there will be some other Americans there, I just realized. I didn't realize it, but there's going to be, I should look it up. But anyway, there's going to be Gene Bauer. Let me see, I can quickly look here, who's going to be there. Gene Bauer will be there, and a lot of people from Europe who I'm not familiar with, but it's a vegan, it's a conference focusing on veganism. And this little town in Portugal has basically, I think for the last couple of years, has just taken the lead to show the world that veganism is a possibility. You know, I think it's so great that, you know, a little town can do that. There's a town in Texas that's kind of doing the same thing. And so I think, you know, this is fantastic. So yeah, it's called the Paredes de Cura Vegetariana. And you can see it on our website if you're interested. And I'm just going to see here. Yeah, they have the people who are coming. Here it is. So I just wanted to tell you. So it's Matthew Glover. He's the founder of Vegan. You've probably heard of Veganuary. That he'll be speaking. Let's see. David Casuto is professor of law at Pace Law School, in specializing in animal law, and then Gene Bauer, founder of Palm Sanctuary, myself, and Steve Jenkins and Derek Walter, who have created Esther the Wonder Pig. Have you heard of Esther the Wonder Pig? We actually visited, oh, I did, Madeline was with me, but I visited Toronto, and outside of Toronto, there's a sanctuary, and there's a pig, who's, anyway, she's got 1.5 million followers on her Facebook page, Esther the Wonder Pig. So these are the folks that kind of, and they're really nice people. I remember spending time there. And Derek Sarno, who's, he's a pretty interesting guy. I know his brother Chad Sarno, but he's a vegan chef, and they're starting this plant-based food chain. It's going all over England. It's coming to the United States. So, and actually, Tobias Leonard is going to be there too, who's works with Melanie Joy. He started this thing on effective vegan advocacy. So it's kind of interesting to see who's going to be there. And So anyway, so that's that. And then we're going down to Lisbon and speaking there. And that's being put on by a local vegan group. And I was connected to them by some people we met when we were in Phoenix who have created a very interesting thing. Actually, maybe post a link about it. It's called Leaf Side. It's 100% whole food, plant-based meal based on Michael Greger's 12 necessary foods to eat. And so all of their meals, you just put them in a blender or you just add water, and they're really delicious. I got samples to them, and I have to say they're fully nutritionally complete. They're very easy, and they're delicious. And I guess for people who don't have time to prepare meals, they're all organic. They're really actually very good. So anyway, he said, I got this friend in Lisbon. So he's with People's Animal and Nature, which is a local group in Lisbon. And then Madrid, there's a sanctuary called El Hogar, this is very interesting. They have a fascinating video if you just want to check out what these people are doing. I'll just say it very briefly. They have a sanctuary, and they've had, I guess, you know, as many sanctuaries do, they've had a lot of problems. It costs so much money to, you know, when you take in these animals and then they get sick, and veterinary care is very expensive, food is expensive. So, but anyway, they're in the middle of fundraising to get to a bigger place, and they have a very holistic view, which I really like. They have like six different sections focus. One, of course, is the animals. Another one is bringing people who are wounded in some way, maybe either emotionally or psychologically or grieving or so forth, to be volunteers there. And they found that that animals who are wounded and people who are wounded together, there's this healing that goes on sort of spontaneously. And that's a part of what they're doing. Another part is to create a vegan hotel there, and another is to create a vegan permaculture garden to feed all the people and as much as possible some of the animals. And then another aspect is to create a whole series of vegan events, and their focus is intersectionality or interconnectedness of social justice issues based on feminism, racism, and so forth, the connections between liberation of women, liberation of animals. The founder is a woman who I've been in touch with. And so that's part of it. And then another part that they're really interesting, I think is very interesting, is the veterinarian perspective. They just say that, you know, as a sanctuary, working with veterinarians is terrible. It's one of their biggest challenges they have, because the veterinary profession in general is completely unequipped to take care of animals in any kind of a loving way, especially farm animals like cows and pigs, chickens, and they don't learn how to take care of them at all. They just learn what drugs to take, and they're just taught that these are animals that are to be used for food and leather and so forth. So they've had just they need to educate veterinarians, and they want to, you know, help veterinarians who are interested to learn, you know, how do you actually take care of animals in a way that is for their benefits, not the benefits of their exploiters. And because they say, you know, it's just a tragedy when an animal there, you know, has some kind of serious problem, they have to put the animal on a truck or something and take them to some other place where there's a bunch of people the animal doesn't know, and it's a kind of a cold, terrifying experience where they're subjected to procedures and drugs and things, and it's not only enormously expensive, it usually doesn't help, and it's very traumatic for the animals. And so it's so they want to create a training there at their sanctuary for veterinarians in compassion for these animals, and to develop modalities that work better, and actually helping the animals. So I just think, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing these people. So they're putting on the events that I'll be doing in Madrid and then in Barcelona. And then I'm going up to Nîmes, I guess it's pronounced France, where our good friend, she's been on our call a number of times, Veronique, who used to live in Los Angeles and is a Wuppertal facilitator and now has her own book out in French. She's moved back to France. She's sponsoring that event. Bring on a lecture there in Nîmes, so I'll be train up there. Then I'm meeting up with Madeline. Madeline's going to fly from Lisbon to Switzerland to visit some of her friends for a few days while I do those. And then we get together again in Switzerland. And then we're going to Athens. And Athens is the only place where we're going to have like a whole bunch of events. And one thing that's going to be going on there is the Animal Rights March, which has been going on in various cities. They have just had a big one in London not too long ago. They're having, you know, 10,000-20,000 people for these marches. And so they'll be having the Animal Rights March in Athens on October 6th when we arrive. And so I'll be speaking for that. And then also we're doing a concert with a lecture on animal rights at a big conservatory music hall, which is kind of a big deal actually in Athens. And then that's on Saturday, and then Sunday there's a vegan life festival I'll be speaking at, which is like a veg fest, and then on Monday an all-day vegan workshop in Athens, and then we're going up to Thessaloniki, I guess it's pronounced, and doing a lecture up there, And then we go to Belgrade, which I was in Belgrade when it was part of Yugoslavia way back in the 1990, I guess it was, before the war. And now it's Serbia. And they're especially putting on a veg fest. And they're going to have a film festival too, and they're going to be showing Cowspiracy. That's one of the things that's interesting, how I have seen Cowspiracy has been one of the most fantastic films ever in terms of being seen all over the world. I mean, everybody in China, England. I have a friend who walked, he spent like 4 months walking all the way from the northern part of England all the way to the southern part of England. He's a walker. He hikes hundreds and hundreds of miles, and he did it as a vegan. And he says, anyone he happened to meet along the way, and he said, "Have you seen Cowspiracy?" They all said, "Oh yeah, we've seen Cowspiracy." You know, it's so interesting. Now, so here we are. We'll be in Serbia, and they'll be showing Cowspiracy there. And they're still showing it. It's really interesting. And then we'll be going down to Split in Croatia, which is a beautiful city on the coast. And Natalie and I are traveling with someone named Philip, who is a World Peace Act facilitator. He went through our training that we gave a couple of years ago on the Big Island in Hawaii. And he's helping out on this trip with some of the logistical things and financing part of it too, because this is something that, you know, we couldn't really do. So we're very grateful to Philip for that. And so he'll be traveling with us. And he was just there actually for a month living in Split. So he set up something there. Zagreb, and we've been there before. And the World Peace Diet has been translated into Croatian. So that's great. They have the book in their own language. Then we go up to Ljubljana, which is one of the most beautiful cities. Sometimes people ask me the most beautiful city in the world. I think Ljubljana is a really beautiful. It's just one of those cities. I don't know if there's such a thing as a beautiful city. It's a remarkably beautiful city. It's just sort of arranged around this beautiful river and with little streets and friendly little markets and nice people and beautiful trees. And it's sort of this very idyllic city from my point of view. So, and it's in Slovenia, which is a wonderful little country. And the World Peace Diet has also been translated into Slovenian, by chance, which is great. So we'll be doing a lecture there. And then we go up, and we're taking buses most of the way. And the buses are amazing. I mean, for like $6, $10, you know, you have this half-a-day bus ride. It's amazingly inexpensive, and they run in a very timely way. It's really fantastic to see how we can get around inexpensively on buses and trains in Europe, all over the place. Really remarkably inexpensive. I've been kind of amazed at the how cost effective. I mean, it's just remarkable. So anyway, we'll be going to Budapest, and we'll be staying with this wonderful man. I think he's wonderful. I haven't met him, but his name is Ksaba, and he translated the World Peace Diet into Hungarian and got it published. So he is setting up two lectures there, one in Budapest and one in Győr. And we'll be staying actually with him. And then we go up to Bratislava, which is in Slovakia. And they have a vegan group there. And we'll be giving a lecture at one of their vegan restaurants that they have. And then we're going over to Vienna. From there, and Vienna has quite a big vegan movement, and there's a wonderful woman there named Nina Messinger, who's created a vegan film that I highly recommend watching. And her film, let me look it up quickly, it's Hope, H-O-P-E, What You Eat Matters. And you can see it, I'm pretty sure. You can definitely see it on Netflix. I think you can even see it on YouTube, perhaps, Hope. H-O-P-E, What You Eat Matters. I'm in that film, and she already set up a lecture there quite a few years ago in Austria, and she's working really hard on this, and also some other people. It's going to be at a yoga studio in Vienna, and then we're going up to Prague and giving a lecture there at the university, and then up to Leipzig, and there's a great large-scale auditorium that has a huge mailing list, and we've been really blessed to, that they wanted to sponsor. We don't have to pay anything. I mean, they're just going to put it on. And they have very well-known European speakers speaking there, including a guy named Rudiger Dalke, who's pretty well-known for his, he's a vegan speaker who's pretty well-known in Germany, has spoken there. So they, when they saw what I was speaking on, they said, instead of having to rent the hall, they said, we'll just, you know, we'll give you the hall and promote it. So that should be a very big event. And then we're going up to Berlin and speaking in Berlin, which is considered by some people the most vegan, one of the most vegan friendly cities in the world. That's also where ProVeg is located. And so we'll be seeing Melanie Joy and Sebastian, I believe, there. And they're going to be helping to promote a lecture. It's being put on by this wonderful woman from Hawaii who lives also in Berlin. She's organizing all these events in Germany. Then we're going down to Speyer, which is a city near, Anyway, it's down near, kind of near Frankfurt. And then we go from there to Munich, where there's another sort of a friend who's starting a vegan business, and he's organizing a lecture at a venue in Munich. And then that's pretty much it. We go down back to Switzerland again, go to Old Switzerland for a few days, and then a lecture in Zurich, and then finally up to Oslo, Norway, on October 29th for a few days. There's a woman there, similar situation to Saba in Hungary. Her name is Ingela, and she translated the World Peace Diet into Norwegian and has got it published in Norwegian. She's setting up some lectures there as well. So when we come back, we'll be here for just a few, about a week and a half or so, and then we'll be embarking on a lecture tour to Philadelphia and Delaware and New York City and Boston, Maryland, right up through Thanksgiving. So we'll be coming back right after Thanksgiving. And that's our schedule. So I think, quite honestly, I hate to say it, but there's a good chance we will not be able to meet in October at all. So I apologize, but I really can't see how it's going to happen. We have a lecture in Prague, I believe it is, on the third Thursday of November, and, October, and, in Prague. So, I just don't think it's going to probably work. Plus, it's just such a difficult time, time zone thing to have happen. So we will be back on the third Thursday in November, and I think we'll just go ahead and plan on doing something the third Thursday of November, and we'll keep in touch about all of that as we go along. But that's kind of the basic idea at this point. So that's the upcoming thing. So if you know anybody in any of these places, you know, let them know. And also, my feeling is that as we travel, it's kind of like connecting with friends and family that we never met before. But in many ways, we find, and I'm sure a lot of you have felt the same way, that people who are vegans, we have this feeling of sharing a core value system, which can help us, I think, really be good working partners. We gave a lecture recently in Santa Rosa, I think a couple of nights ago, on Sunday night, and it was kind of a going-away lecture. It was very nice to see. There's a restaurant called Gaia's Garden here in Santa Rosa, which is about an hour from where we live. And the local vegan advocates in Santa Rosa did something that has never happened at that restaurant, which was to just create a sit-down meal. Usually it's always a buffet there. But they created a sit-down meal, and they said there's a maximum of 50 people who can come for a ticket price. It was $25. And for the meal and the lecture, and they got actually 60 people came. Place was packed, and I remember during the lecture I was giving after the delicious food, there were questions that people are asking about how we can deal with some of the issues that we have as vegans, especially with anger and with conflict that comes up, not just between us as vegans with people who are not yet vegans, but also we who are vegans and other vegans. You know, you would think that that wouldn't happen. I mean, you can understand why there might be conflicts with people who are not vegans, because we're eating different foods and it's easy for people to feel judged. It's easy for people to get angry and upset when we're vegans with people who just keep eating meat. And I guess easy for people who are non-vegans or pre-vegans to get upset with vegans because they feel that we are rejecting them or judging them or something like that if we won't eat their food. And so there's lots of room for improvement, I think, in our relationships with non-vegans. So I was talking about a lot of things I talk about on our call, just the importance of planting seeds and the importance of that basic idea, which I want to mention again, which is that I think one of the most effective seeds that we can plant is the seed of satyagraha, or truth power, where we talk about just our own truth without trying to change the other person, and talk about how I'm so glad that I was able to change. I'm so glad that I discovered that the only reason I was eating animal foods was because I was just following orders. So that basic meme or that basic idea, I'm so glad I discovered that the only reason I was eating animal foods was because I was just following orders, that I had no choice in the matter, basically. And I realized that those orders were not in my best interests, and I'm not doing it anymore, and it's great. And that basic series, probably three different thoughts together, that the only reason anyone eats animal foods is because we're following orders that we didn't have any say over. And they're not in our best interest. They're definitely not in the best interest of the earth or hungry people or animals or wildlife or future generations or ecosystems, you know, anyone. But not only that, the third aspect is I was able to change, and it's fantastic. And that basic idea, how great it is. I'm so grateful. And I think if we find our own way of saying that in situations that we have an opportunity to plant a seed, and we can usually bring the conversation around to food or to animals without too much difficulty, and just mention that in a very non-threatening way, like, gosh, I'm so glad I realized the only reason I was eating animal foods was because I was just following orders, and I'm not doing it anymore, and it's great. I've done that myself, and I've just found it's very satisfying. It's a feeling of just planting a truth and doing it in a way that's not in any way blaming or criticizing anyone, and that helps them in their process, I think, in a very significant way, because it's not acknowledged in any of the official narratives that we are eating animal foods because we're just following orders, that we're indoctrinated into it. It's an indoctrinated behavior that is counterproductive for ourselves as individuals and for our entire society. It's devastating on every dimension of our health. And so when we only have a few minutes, and if they ask questions and we can go into it more in depth, yeah, I realize that we grow enough food every year to feed 10 or 11 billion people, yet people are starving because we're feeding most of the food to animals. And so I'm so glad that I'm contributing a little bit to helping hungry people. And keep bringing it back to myself and my own story as we speak to other people, that takes the pressure off from them feeling blamed, and gives them space to apply the same thing to themselves, because we human beings love stories. And when we tell a little story, I eat meat all my life and dairy and everything, and then I read something, or I met some people, or I saw a movie or whatever it was, and then I realized, gosh, I was just doing this because I was following orders, and I'm not doing it anymore, and it's great. And so that basic idea, I think, is a liberating idea that is time for it to really go forth. And I think, somebody said something the other day I thought was interesting. He said, this is a riddle. How do you make the vegan movement into a social justice movement? And the answer, you write the World Peace Diet. And in a sense, that's really what the World Peace Diet was about. It was about two things, making the vegan movement into a social justice movement and making the vegan movement into a spiritual movement. And they're all connected. And veganism, spirituality, and social justice are all like three aspects of the same phenomena, situation, because our violence towards each other is a political and spiritual problem. Our violence towards animals is also interconnected with that. War, conflict, slavery, shutting down our ethics and our feelings. So writing the World Peace Diet was basically about making the vegan movement, which was essentially just more about animals and so forth, to make it into a social justice movement, and into a peace movement, and into a spiritual movement based in the true sense of spirituality. One of the things that I think it's important to emphasize is that all the institutions in our society have one basic goal, and that goal is to transmit the values in the society. Every institution knows that the government is in place in order to transmit the government's values from generation to generation. Education does the same thing, and religion does the same thing, and the media does the same thing. It's basically to keep the cultural narrative going and bring it from generation to generation. And that's very different, though, from spirituality. So religion is a social institution that's, again, it's like any other social institution. Its primary goal is to transmit the culture's values from generation to generation. However, spirituality also has this alternative, religion also has this alternative purpose, which is to somehow help its adherents to grow spiritually, and spirituality doesn't have any kind of divided loyalty like that. And so I think what we're seeing is now people are realizing that true spirituality, whether we're atheists or whatever we are, has to do with kindness, caring, and awakening. Awakening to our true nature, caring for other expressions of life, and any religion worthy of the name is not only about transmitting the culture's values, because society will never evolve if we just do that. It has to include an authentic cultivation of spirituality. Spirituality has no problem questioning the violence in the hamburger and sees the violence in the hamburger and sees the pig in the bacon and sees the violence in food. Spirituality understands all that, whereas religion can easily turn a blind eye. So I think the foundation, really, of the vegan movement now has broadened, and I think this is something we can really celebrate, and we can all work on this together to include everything, essentially. I mean, to include environmental devastation, social injustice, war, spiritual shallowness, or the loss of our purpose as a society. I mean, all of this is bound intimately with our treatment of animals. We are really urged, I would say, by the situation to help people to understand us, that until we see the full range of consequences of animal agriculture to every dimension of our outer life and our inner life, then we're not going to be able to deal effectively with our problems. And veganism is understood as ahimsa or nonviolence, and as respect and kindness for others, it is a completely different narrative to the narrative that we were all raised with. And it's eminently doable. It's something we can all adopt, and we can all not only adopt, but we can contribute to, and we can teach, as Sassy is doing, teaching the cooking classes. That's important. And in teaching the underlying philosophy, helping people to make the connections. Because if people understand why, then they will go to great lengths to figure out how to do it. And if they don't understand why, then they won't. So I think understanding why is really important. And then also teaching people how to make healthy meals and how to buy shoes that are not made out of leather and all these other things. That's important too. All right, so as we embark on our European tour, these are some of the things that I'm aware of right now. We have had right up recently this gigantic global climate summit here in San Francisco. I know there's been quite we have a good friend who's been going to it almost every day. She says that more than ever, they are making the connection with animal agriculture, but still there's a long way to go. There's still, like, we were invited, I'm glad we didn't go, we were invited to a dinner by this group that's, their whole thing is climate change, you know, and our friend invited us and she went. And she said they just had this whole, they all ate at a restaurant. It was a regular meat restaurant and they all ate meat. She and her boyfriend were the only ones that were vegans. Out of like 10 people that were all there for a global climate change thing. And so there's still an enormous amount of denial, basically, about this. So anyway, there's all these different things to that we can all contribute to, I think, in our understanding. So I just want to close with reminding everyone that we have the resources for September 2018 that I made available to you. And there's actually a very interesting interview that I did with Matthew Cole, I think his name is, yeah. There's a link to that. That's actually from our good friend Susan, who's a world peace, Susan Pitcairn, Susan and Roger. She's a world peace facilitator, and she said, you know, he does really good interviews, very in depth with vegans. So we did one with him, and I'm also doing a lecture or an interview, actually, on the Vegan Warrior Summit, which starts tomorrow, actually. So definitely check that out. And that's an online summit. And also there's an audio I did with Kim Smith in Las Vegas and a few other videos that are up of recent speaking engagements. Oh, and there's this great essay by Kathleen, I think you pronounce her name, Cavaney, from the eastern coast of Canada. She's actually in the Atlantic time zone. So for her, it's an hour later than even the eastern time zone. But she's been on our call a few times, and she wrote a very fine article that was picked up all across Canada. It's called The Conversation. So it really went, you know, got out to a lot of people and talks about it's eating as a social, political, and spiritual act, the World Peace Diet. And quite a few other interesting things you'll see. The American Journal of Pediatrics has now published a special article that it's essential for mothers and children to avoid processed meats. So these things are happening. There's a lot, and this new study shows that 10% of Canadians are now vegan or vegetarian. I mean, it's very good to see the continuing increase in vegans and vegetarians that are happening. And then quite a few, as you all heard, that Monsanto lost in San Francisco, that lawsuit, that's a big deal. And because there's thousands of people more that want to have similar lawsuits against Monsanto and Bayer's just buying up Monsanto and their stock is dropping. So hopefully there's going to be an awakening that we will get away from using these toxic chemicals on our earth. A very interesting article, The Hidden Vegetarians of Tibet. I'm working right now in the last stages of publishing a new book I'm the editor of called Buddhism and Veganism, Essays Connecting Spiritual Awakening and Animal Liberation. And so there's some of the authors that are in the book that I'm editing are from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And it's an interesting article that there have always been vegetarians in Tibet, even though people a lot of times think of Tibetan Buddhists as eating meat. There's actually a very widespread and deep tradition of vegetarianism in Tibet. Anyway, I won't go through all these others. There's many more things you can look at here. And excellent information. The vegan movement is just exploding, as usual, in countless ways. And there's more ways that all of us, I think, can plug in, as Sassy has been doing. Find your niche and then have a good time. And I think the animals are really hoping that we, each one of us, will be able to be effective in what we're doing. And also, it's essential that we be happy. And as I started to say earlier, that we don't attack other vegans, that we really learn to respect human beings and non-vegans as well as vegans. Realize that we all have our unique truths, and no one has a monopoly on the one right way to promote veganism. And I think in that way we'll be able to create a more harmonious and powerful movement. But it really all comes back to each one of us doing the work on ourselves. I think in many ways the greatest gift we can give to animals is to do the inner work of freeing ourselves from the narrative of violence that is in the animal agriculture mentality that we've all had injected into us by being raised in this society. When we can, in a sense, really root that out of ourselves and connect with our own deeper roots of kindness and compassion, then we will be guided in all of our words and actions and all of our projects and all of our gestures. It's not what we say, it's how we say it. It's who we are as we're saying it. It's the being that we are that gets through in our communications. So much love to you all. I want to thank you again for joining us. And that's it for now. I'm sorry we didn't have time to maybe get into some other questions that you might have all had, but nobody pressed *6. So I'm assuming that there weren't any other questions. Feel free to be in touch with us during the next month or 2 months, probably, till we're together again in November. We do have email while we're traveling, and we will be able to communicate with people. So if you have any questions or concerns, we'll do our best to answer. We're going to be traveling like mad, but we'll have long bus rides. We'll see how it all goes. All right, I think we can close with, what should we do here? How about with the... a little, let's see, short song. This is the Joy of Sky. I think there's something really beautiful about looking into the sky and realizing there's an infinite cosmos, and we're part of that, and there's so much more that we can awaken to. We're on this earth for a brief period to contribute as best we can to the healing of our world. This is the Joy of Sky. Thanks to all of you for the great works you're doing.